and welcome to the Ornithology Podcast. My name is Reginald T. Stallworth of Oxford, and I'm here to give you a bit of a glimpse into the branch of zoology that concerns the study of birds. Several aspects of ornithology differ between the different related disciplines, due partly to the high visibility of the aesthetic appeal of birds. Most marked among these is the extent of studies undertaken by amateurs working within parameters of strict scientific methodology. But that is neither here nor there. You are here today to discuss the ins and the outs, as they may be, of bird migration. Migratory birds are a fascinating species when you seriously look at them. Bird migration generally refers to regular seasonal journeys undertaken by many different species of birds and is often confused for other things. Bird movements in general, including those made in response to changes in food availability, habitat, or weather. These, however, are usually irregular and only in one direction or another, and are termed variously as nomadicism, invasions, dispersals, or interruptions. Migration is marked by its annual seasonality. In contrast, birds that are non-migratory are known as resident birds. So that is your little glimpse inside the ornithology department here at Oxford, and I hope you have so enjoyed it. Thank you, and good day. And hi, and welcome to the Caffeination Podcast. I figured that was long enough to let the prank go on. Hopefully you've enjoyed our little glimpse into the ornithology department at Oxford, which I've probably butchered 6 different languages, 5 different people, and everything else going on. This is, of course, Caffeination number 323. It's a little bit of a nonsense edition. This is, of course, the April Fool's edition. So if you gave yourself a little bit of a start, hopefully you've gotten over it, or you actually continued listening to this point. But, I like throwing things up every once in a while, and I absolutely love April Fool's Day. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're curious as to where it might be located, please feel free to lovingly head on over to www.caffination.com. That is caffeination.com. And believe it or not, despite this in the background, this is still the Caffeination Podcast. We are the high-octane world of caffeine culture and technology news, not ornithology, in any stretch of the imagination. As fascinating as birds are, they're just not my cup of tea. But we do, however, talk about tea from time to time. We do talk about a whole bunch of other different caffeinated things, and we're just going to be going on today and talking about a bunch of the different little pranks that happen on today, of all days, April Fool's Day. We're going to be talking about pranks, jokes, scams, viri, silliness, nonsense, Legos, magic, sentiment, sentient computers, bacon, and Bigfoot, as well as a host of other different things, so hopefully you're going to enjoy and stick around with us. if you have any comments, feedback, suggestion, or hate mail, anything you can do, you can fire it right off to caffeination@gmail.com. We are... I'm really kind of happy that it went off as well as it did. It was kind of scary because I wasn't really sure that anything would actually work. My accent's probably horrible. But beyond that, I've only ever changed up the intro a couple other times. I was going to try and translate everything to German and give it a go. I did for a while ago, I think on episode 250, I actually changed over to speaking entirely in Spanish for the first, I think, 3 minutes of the show, which is somewhat of a trick since I did rather poorly in high school Spanish. But it was, hola y bienvenidos a la podcast de la Caffeination. And then I kind of remembered that I really didn't speak Spanish, and this wasn't a soccer broadcast or a football broadcast if you're in that section of the world. So we're going to move right along. But hopefully you'll give me this little pass. And I keep saying that just for one particular reason. There's certain kinds of people out there who are irritated beyond belief at April Fool's Day. They can't stand people being silly. They can't stand the nonsense. We'll catch up with you next time, but then again, if you're an incredibly serious type of person, I don't think you're listening to this show to begin with. But I posted something over at travelersmug.com in case you'd like to check up on why I think people need to joke. Things are serious enough in the world, you know, you might want to just take a little time and a little nonsense now and then is cherished by the wisest men. I don't know where else that's from, but I do know it, however, is the one of the taglines of the Gene Wilder-driven Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I'm not even sure if it's in the book because I can't remember specifically, but there you go, and here we are. Before we did get into too much else, I did want to tell you just a little bit about our sponsor. The old way is to meet for businesses over the phone or in person. The new way and the better way is to meet clients or colleagues online with GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is like meeting in person, but consumes a lot less of your time and expenses. You can start meetings with just a click. Everyone sees your computer desktop on their monitor, so they can follow around as you move from page to page, topic to topic. Use GoToMeeting for sales presentations, product demos, or training sessions. Even collaborate on documents by sharing screens in real time. I've used GoToMeeting. We hosted meetings from presenters from coast to coast or even just in the next building over, and the response has always been the same. Quick, seamless transition between different people, and it was very efficient at hosting meetings. It was a fantastic piece of software. So you too can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days, but you must visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast for your free 30-day trial. All right, we have a great show lined up for you today. Hopefully the initial shock has worn off by now and we can get on down into the good stuff. We're going to be going through and ripping through the pranks that were pulled today. I've always wanted to do a show on April Fool's. It just hasn't really happened. I think it's like once every 5 years or 4 years I'll get to do a show, because I do a twice-weekly show. So I think every couple years I'll manage to eke one of these out, and hopefully I'll have something a little bit better planned for next time. Who knows? But the first little thing that we have up for here is we just wanted to remind you about the blog design guide. It's a series of articles that I've been writing over the past couple weeks that hopefully help you to better manage your content, both visually, aesthetically, and accessibility-wise. And the last little thing that I've put out so far is talking about backups. And I'm often stunned by how many people don't know how to back up their blog. They have backups of everything else in their life. They have backups of all of their pictures. They have backups of everything. They have hard drives that they keep in safe deposit boxes, but people don't understand and don't know how to back up their blog. So I give you a little bit of an idea on how you can do a little bit of Unix command line interface. If you have a Linux box or a Unix box or something like that, you can try this out. There's a bunch of other programs up there, and the simplest and easiest way is just set up a day during the week where you log on, you download everything via FTP, and what you do is whenever you change anything on your blog, whenever you update anything, whenever you add a new file or something like that. I'm not talking articles or anything like that. We'll get to that in just a second. I'm talking like if you upload a swatch of new pictures or something like that, make sure you put them on your local copy as well. And I actually have a copy on the server in our garage of 98.9% of everything that I have on the web. So if I need it, it's there. So if my server in wherever downtown, who knows where it is, blows up, I am all right. I'm well covered. You should be too. So there's a bunch of little files that I have out there, the things that you can go and back up. And then the next little thing is a plugin that I suggested called WP Database Backup. If you're currently using WordPress and you don't have some kind of database backup solution in place, you definitely need to do this. And one of the best things I like about this plugin is that you can schedule it to drop backups of your databases down to an email address to anything, you know, repeatedly, so you don't even have to worry about it. So it's you can schedule it. It's very nice. And even if you are completely a non-technical person, you don't have to be to do the backups. You might have to be a little bit more of one to restore them if that's the case, but you know, that's a problem for another time. All right, we're going to head right on into the foolish cruft, all the news that's fit to be made up. TechCrunch did a fantastic thing this morning. They ruined everybody's fun. They've listed as many different pieces of tomfoolery and sheilafoolery that they could find. I am an April Fool. I'm very proud of it. But they had YouTube, Amazon, they had 3D browsing, Google Masters AI. I mean, it was like a whole list of things. Some of my favorites from their article is that The Guardian, the paper in the UK, has gone all Twitter. They said, experts say that any story can be told in 140 characters. They're removing the print edition entirely. And I love that. I think that shows a little bit of self-humility there. It shows a little bit of, you know, willing to go back on themselves, and I think that's pretty funny. Next little thing, gives you pretty much the long and the short of most, if not all, of the pranks that I've seen online. I'm just going to give you a rundown of some of my favorites and some that I think were kind of poor. YouTube had everything upside down. A lot of the clips that they had featured on the homepage were actually clips that are supposed to be viewed upside down, but they flipped them up right side up and then turned the entire page upside down, which included loading a font, which made everything load upside down. They actually had a video player that was upside down. It was all right, but I think they've done this before. It's just not something that I felt was well done, I guess. It was just seemed a little sloppy. And you know what? Always a fun time. I got to tell you, I love going over to Think Geek on April Fool's Day. Today they had Squeeze Bacon, which is one of my favorite products. They had a Unicorn Chaser, Interactive Portal t-shirts, the Think Geek Secret QR Code shirt, which is actually real, the Buzzword Shocking Speech Recognition wristband. My favorite of all of them are the following two, though. Ultimate Assassin's Weapon, the Ice Mold. So it's basically a silicon ice mold of a dagger, which I think they could probably end up selling because you have to have incredibly cold temperatures to even sharpen it. And then the last little thing they have is a USB pet rock. It's a USB cord that goes into a rock. There's nothing else. It uses no electricity. It's every bit as entertaining as the original pet rock. So I thought that was fantastic. Of course, they also have links up to the favorites from the past, so you can head on over there and check that out. Good thing about ThinkGeek is even though they changed their initial homepage, if you go there anytime after the fact and just search for April Fools or something, they have all of the April Fools pranks they've pulled in each year up there, so it's great. Google announced that they had the Cognitive Autoheuristic Distributed Intelligence Entity, or CADI, which is basically they created AI, and then they give you a little bit of a walkthrough where they blame it on Renard Descartes, which I found kind of strange. All in all, I think Google Mars was a little bit better. The moon base and things like that were a little bit more well done. I don't really know about that one, less or not. I do, however, think that the autopilot for email is fantastic. You can actually set the level of capitalization, typos, brevity, and emoticon use so that it can respond to your emails for you, of course using the KDE engine. And one of the funniest things that I actually did think about KDE was the fact that they allowed KDE to have a homepage. And apparently everything KDE needed to know about making homepages she learned from late 1990s GeoCities homepages. There's music that plays automatically. I think there's unicorns, there's pandas everywhere, which is the symbol for KDE for some unknown reason. I don't know if it's... I don't know. It's just a panda. So if you went on Google Maps today, instead of a little person icon, there was a little panda icon, which was cute, I guess. But overall, I like the fact that Google allowed the different places around the globe, like Google Australia, Google other things, to actually split off and do their own separate little pranks, which I actually thought was pretty cool. The next little thing they had up here was Google Chrome 3D Browsing. They've allowed for stereoscopic imagery to be used, and so basically everybody has red blue glasses lying around, which most of my friends I've found out actually do, which is somewhat disturbing, so I just wanted to put it out there. Next little thing we have up for you here is when government gets in on the act. It's from a lovely little blog where it says government abolishes itself in error, talking about a government over in the UK. They've managed to replace 44 districts and county councils with 9 unitary authorities. So basically, they've taken the entire government apart, all the way down to the local authority, so there is no more federal government. And then after they kind of realized the error of their ways after several days, the federal government said they were going to reinstate the government, in which point the local authority said, well, you kind of took away all your power, so you really can't say anything, which I thought was pretty funny. All right, moving right along. The Umbrella Corporation has requested a bailout. Apparently, all those zombie infestations, a la Resident Evil, have kind of not really gone their way. They wanted a little bit more return for their investment into murdering beasts, so they're asking for $100 billion in aid money. I don't know, but I think they might be good for it. You never know. Alright, up next from over at randomgoodstuff.com, you can have a call and a shave. It's the Polo Frail. It's an interesting little cell phone that has the 5-bladed razor at the very end. If it was like an electric razor, I could definitely see it working, but this seems more than a little bit pedestrian, if you ask me. Thought it was pretty funny, so I thought I'd move it along. Then the last little thing that we have for you here in the foolish cruft is Windows 7 has a small problem. Apparently, if you were in on some of the different versions of the Windows 7 beta, and you looked at some of the scenery, if you looked very, very closely, you would have seen Bigfoot. Now, I'm not sure if the sighting of Bigfoot is a joke or if the Bigfoot was actually in there. The only thing I have to go for it from is the screenshot from pcplus.co.uk. So I thought that was pretty funny. So thank you for everybody who kind of pointed me in the correct direction. Hopefully all the stuff was out there and up and funny. There's a lot of interesting things that happened today, and I really kind of enjoy the the time and the love that goes into a very well-crafted prank. It's easy to be mean. It's easy to be to kind of pull off a slapstick. I mean, you throw a banana peel on the ground, have somebody slip over. I mean, it's golden no matter what you do, no matter who it is. Even, hey, if it's an old nun with a walker, I'm pretty sure somebody will laugh. But it's to pull off a really, truly well-executed prank, you have to have a lot of things go right. And I got to tell you, if you were going to prank me on April Fool's Day, then you have to also have a couple of your ducks in a row. And I love the challenge of seeing, you know, where I'm going to get pranked. I don't consider being Rickrolled pranks. So if somebody sends you a link and say, hey, you know what, if you click on this, you know, this is a this is an example of why this person is being brought up for a weapons charge. Nuclear grade plutonium found in Philadelphia Art Museum. What? You click on the link and it's Rickrolled. Okay, yeah, fine. You're funny. You crafted a very interesting little story that kind of led people down a path, but you really didn't follow through with something truly original and wonderful. I did, however, manage to pull off one small little prank today. A couple of the people who work in the office with me, I managed to convince them that the Penn University, you know, the Ivy League Penn, and Drexel University, which actually share a common border of campuses, were actually going to be merging. Because after all, they're right next to each other. They could cut down on administration fees, and, you know, due to the economy, it seemed to be a good idea. Penn was going to take Drexel's mascot, the dragon, and Drexel was going to get all the ivy. So it was pretty much an even trade all around. funny thing was, I put this out on Twitter, and Drexel News, which I was unaware that was actually monitoring that kind of thing, said not funny, but gave me a good-natured smile. The funny thing is, I managed to convince both people, and only one of them believed me when I said April Fool's. The other one kind of took it and ran. Got a little bit worried there, but hey, it's all in good fun. Alright, moving on to the foolish cruft. You didn't think this stuff was true, but guess what? It is. The first one is Conflicker. Now, here's a little deal about Conflicker, that media buzzword worm that's been out there. Basically, Conflicker has been around since roughly the end of 2008. It is exploiting a hole in Windows that, unless you have patched your computer since November or October of 2008, your computer is vulnerable. Most people have patched their computer since then, or most people have been infected by the worm and can't do certain things. One of the interesting tests you can try is if you click on the link in the show notes over at caffeination.com, Conflicker isn't just a joke, that link specifically. It will take you to the Symantec homepage. If you can go to that homepage, guess what? You're all right. For the most part, most of the people who have been infected by Conflicker are unable to go to a webpage hosted on Symantec.com, McAfee.com, or a couple of the other security websites, which I thought was a pretty interesting idea. Basically, it's not that April 1st was when, you know, it was like Armageddon for this worm. April 1st was a time at which the worm was supposed to get more sophisticated in its attempt to hide itself on the network. So that's why people were starting to get worried. So that way you could root out all the different installations up until that point. So they're still going to find it. It's an ebb and a flow in virus research, so it's going to be interesting to see where that all turns out. In fact, the Department of Homeland Security actually released a Conflicker/down-and-up computer worm detection tool, so you can head on over there to that to actually see. And they have a whole bunch of links to the Microsoft patch. They have a link to the Microsoft PC safety hotline, which I'm sure unsure what that actually does. I think you actually might need an account with Microsoft, but that's 1-866-PC-SAFETY, and they also have links over to McAfee and Symantec and a whole bunch of other stuff there. So you can go with the Department of Homeland Security if you're feeling brave that way. Alright, up next we have an interesting little story that was sent in response to a story we had a couple times ago. I think it was on episode 320, we talked about one house that was being heated by solar rays, and I mentioned, kind of in passing, that I didn't really think that it was possible to start a fire with the tools of the sun, because they weren't using magnifying glasses, they were using mirrors. Well, we had one of our listeners, Yop, thank you very much for sending this in. It turns out that MythBusters actually attempted to do just the same thing. They used a series of mirrors and attempted to set fire to a ship while it was in the water, and they did a pretty good job of it. So they have not only just regular mirrors, but these are 300 bronze mirrors. So they actually all, you know, worked and everybody aimed it, and they ended up burning holes in it. And it's a fascinating story from front to back. So if you are interested at all, the website's hosted over at mit.edu. This is a fun little jaunt, and I thank you so much for sending this in. I love MythBusters. It's really one of the coolest shows that's out there, and if you are on Twitter and you're not following him, it's pretty cool to actually see one of the fellows over at Don't Try This at Home. So it's I think it's just don't try this or don't try this at home. I have to look. If I can find it again, I'll put it up there. All right, another. We're just talking strange but true stories here. Baggage handler falls asleep in New York and ends up in Boston. This was from over at NBC Philadelphia. But, yeah, apparently... one of the baggage handlers in New York fell in the belly of a JetBlue airplane. Some were arguing that his coworkers might have actually locked him in, but he refused all medical attention. He drove back home to Boston, or from Boston to New York. I thought it was pretty funny, so I thought I'd pass it along to you. All right, next little thing we have up for you here over at HackedGadgets.com. Now, I could have sworn this was going to be an April Fool's prank, but this was an iPhone-controlled Mazda RX-8. Now, it could very well be an April Fool's prank. I'm not entirely sure, but it looks pretty legit. I think it's pretty funny either way if it isn't, so I just decided to throw it at this end. The next little thing we have up here for you here, I'm going to a little bit of my sports fandom show here, is the Mets' second base has been stolen more times than that, but memorabilia vendor wants to pursue charges. Basically, at the Mets' spring training facility in Port St. Lucie, Florida, there was a table with a vendor, and every time that the Mets were playing and there was an event that the vendor was going to be at, he had a second base sitting on a table, and when he wasn't there, they moved the table into storage. Well, apparently the base itself was stolen and turned up several days later, and it's pretty funny. So the base was actually in the guy's driveway, so it's all in good fun. I thought it was pretty funny because somebody stole second on the Mets, but hey, that's just me. I'm a Phillies fan. All right, this one's slightly tragic but slightly strange, and I actually did think it was a joke. That's the sad part. A woman has been missing for 7 years. She was found in her apartment under piles of stuff. People, this woman's a pack rat, so this is incredibly tragic. People have searched her apartment. They went in after nobody, heard from her after, like, years. They went in before this. There have been multiple searches through her apartment, multiple searches around. They only found her after her apartment was being cleaned out because nobody was paying her rent. It's just crazy. And they only found bones at this point. Apparently, she suffered some kind of collapse of the massive amounts of stuff that she had hoarded. So that was just insane, and I wanted to pass it along because I honestly thought it was a joke, and I was seriously going to laugh it off at first, but it was, like, kind of a little... scary. It's the same point. All right, up next we have Ethernet cable is fashionable now. I was unaware of it, but I have tons of it, and I could probably be the next Giorgio Armani at this point. Ethernet cable fashion show looks like a data center disaster. From over at Gizmodo, there's two lovely pictures that they have up here. One is a strange little organic structure growing off of a woman's head that is in a giant Nautilus-style curl. There are 6 different colors of Ethernet cables. There's yellow, cyan, blue, dark blue, magenta, red, and I think orange in there. And it's all kind of held together by a lovely thick neck strap and the yellow cording being wrapped around it. So it's kind of strange. I don't really understand what the point of it is, but hey, I'm all for using things in different ways that they're not originally intended. I think it's kind of funny to play around with that. And then the second little picture is actually something that I actually think took a little bit more doing. The base of the design is Ethernet cables, but everything else is a network admin's best friend. Everything else in the entirety of the outfit is made out of twist ties or zip ties, pulled out and made a kind of lovely little sea cucumber spiky kind of thing going on, wrapping up around the model. So I thought that was pretty fun and cool, and decided to pass it along to you. All right, up next, sculpt Lego style. If you are somebody who works in 3D triangulated meshes, then you too can get your own studs out or studs to the side Lego sculpture with a program called LSculpt. This is a command line interface that allows you to take any 3D mesh model, put it in, and get the build plans for how to do it out of Lego, which I think is fantastic. It's unbelievable, and I really have to thank Dean from over at the Soho Tech Podcast. If you are unaware, Soho Tech Podcast is also a member of the Tech Podcast Network, and Soho stands for Small Office Home Office Technology Podcast. Dean runs a crazy little podcast over there. It's very cool, so I highly suggest that you head on over there, especially if you're interested in the areas of small office or home office technology. But thank you so much, Dean, for sharing that link. That's a great little thing, and I gotta tell you, I'm gonna be very tempted to see if some of the architecture students might want to play around with that one. I think it think it has potential. I'd like to see more use of Legos in architecture, but that's just me. All right, and then the last little thing we have here for Foolish Cruff, you didn't think it wasn't, was Chakafetah comes to Stephen Colbert's aid against NASA. Now, if you were unaware, NASA held a contest for naming the next module of the space station, Module 3. And Colbert had his legion of fans write in the name Colbert for the third model. NASA, of course, laughed it off and then promptly named it, was going to name it Serenity. Which, of course, is a little bit of kind of a weird area, because that's just named after a TV show when you really break it down to it. While I think it's cool naming it after either one, I would kind of lean more towards the sci-fi thing. But then I kind of thought about it and said, you know what? Colbert won fair and square, and apparently I agree with the congressman from West Philadelphia. Chakafetah, who has been a guest on the Colbert Report in his Better Know a District series, has come to his aid, and he basically said that the people have spoken and Stephen Colbert won it fair and square. We insist on democracy in orbit, which I gotta say would be an awesome name for a band. Like, every once in a while you hear these weird sound bites, and you know what? I think I would listen to a band, regardless of what kind of music they played, if they were named Democracy in Orbit. I mean, hey, Chinese Democracy was an album that took forever to release, so that's kind of fun and cool. Alright, moving along to the consumable and caffeinated bits, and then we're gonna head you out on your way, because hey, it's the middle of the week. We had a lot of funny, but we didn't want to overladen the podcast with any one of the different things. It'll be much more serious and much more reserved podcast and the next time around, but we do have a couple little things from consumable and caffeinated bits. I would like to send a huge thank you out to Keith Albright of the Mind of Root podcast, who sent me in the coffee RFC. Now, if you were unaware, RFC is something that engineers put out when they have nothing better to do. Well, no, they actually put it out when they're asking for a request for comments, which is basically what they want people to do is they put a document out and say, okay, this is HTTP, this is any number of associated acronyms for anything, and what we're looking for is information and feedback back. Well, back in 1998, a lovely man by the name of L. Massentner actually put out an interesting little RFC called Hypertext Coffee Pot Protocol. And it's a long, very engineering-style document about, you know, basically the addition type of milk type, syrup type, sweetener type, spice type, alcohol type, cream, Bart skim milk. It runs down absolutely everything you would need to create your very own HTCP CP 1.0. Which I thought was relatively interesting, and then I passed it along to one of my other coffee friends. You may remember him from such websites as ineedcoffee.com, but Mass actually has a new website up there called coffeehero.com, and he actually pulled some of the funnier parts out of it, so I linked to his blog as well, so hopefully you can head on over there and check that out. Some of the gems that he pulled out are: coffee pot heats water using electronic mechanisms so there is no fire, thus firewalls are necessary, the firewall control policy is irrelevant. And then the last one, but my absolute favorite section, and when I was reading it, I saw this as well. It says, what about security protocol? Anyone who gets in between me and my morning coffee should be insecure. So I thought that was pretty funny, so I thought I'd pass along all the links associated with the coffee RSC. Isn't it funny to see how jokes from 10 years ago and 11 years ago in this case are actually still being pushed out? All right, then the last little thing we have for you here is something incredibly serious, but it's slightly silly when you really think about it. How long has that been in the fridge? Is it still tasty? Well, there's a new website out there called stilltasty.com that allows you to pick any one of the number of different food items, how they've been prepared. For instance, coffee freshly brewed is, well, able to stay in the refrigerator for one day. It's able to stay in the freezer for 3 to 4 months. I was unaware of that. If you want to check out vegetables, you can check out things such as artichokes fresh or cooked. You can check out artichokes commercially canned or bottled or opened, or artichokes commercially canned or bottled unopened, arugula rocket fresh and raw, asparagus commercially frozen, asparagus fresh and cooked, and asparagus fresh and raw. So you can see any one of these. By the way, if you have raw asparagus, it'll stay in the refrigerator for 3 to 4 days, and you can freeze it anywhere from 12 to 18 months. That's just saying. So I thought this was a really interesting little website, and I wanted to kind of put it into your quiver so that you can use for cool and interesting websites when the need arises. But it's also something you can kind of point people to and say, you know what, the spaghetti's been in the fridge for over a week. Is it still tasty? Well, it still might be tasty, but it just might give you some extra penicillin in your diet. But all right, that about wraps it up here for the podcast. This has been Caffeination, not Ornithology. This has been Caffeination number 223. A little bit short today, but like I said, hopefully we're going to make up for it in the ton of content that we're going to have for everyone. every other show out there. But hopefully everybody enjoyed today's little jaunt through the world of bird research and beyond. So thank you so much for listening. This podcast is lovingly nestled along with all of its episodic friends over at caffeination.com. So that is www.caffeination.com. We are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other member shows, including this one, agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content. They are all listed over at techpodcasts.com. Thank you so much to everybody who put information in for today's show. If you would like to submit comments, feedback, suggestions, stories, or anything else, you can please email me at caffeination@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Stay caffeinated, people.